ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Chapter 12, Devotional Service, Text Number 16. But before we continue with Text Number 16, we'll read the translations of the whole chapter. Arjuna inquired, which are considered to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect. But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. Text number 6.
But those who worship me, it's the Sanskrit now. Yeah? But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engage in devotional service, and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Prita, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage.
If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act giving up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He by whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equiposed in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee, who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me.
Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me.
So now we'll continue with text number 16. Yes, we did 15 yesterday. Didn't we? No? Huh? We did 13 and 14, you mean? We did 15, huh? Yeah. So 16. Please repeat word for word. Anapekshaha. Suchihi dakshaha udashinaha gatavyataha sarva arampa parichagi yaha matbaktaha saha me priyaha anapeksha suchir daksha Udasino gatavyata sarvarambha parichagi yomat bhakta same priyaha anapeksha suchir daksha udasino gatavyata sarvarambha parichagi Yo mat bhakta same priya anapeksha suchir daksha udasino gatavyata sarvaramba parichagi Yo mat bhakta same priya anapeksha suchir daksha Udasino gatavyata sarvarambha parityagi yomat bhakta same priya amas nikta sugir sachash anukta gudas nikta sarvarambha parityagi Yomad bhakta same priya anapeksha suchir daksha udasino gatavyata sarvarambha parichagi Yomad bhakta same priya anapeksha neutral suchi Pure, Daksha, expert, Udashinaha, free from care, Gatavyataha, free from all distress, Sarva Arambha, of all endeavors, Parityagi, renouncer, Yaha, anyone who, Matbhaktaha, My devotee, Saha, he, me, to me, Priyaha, very dear. Translation, my devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. Purport, Money may be offered to a devotee, but he should not struggle to acquire it. If automatically, by the grace of the Supreme, money comes to him, he is not agitated. Naturally, a devotee takes a bath at least twice a day and rises early in the morning for devotional service. Thus, he is naturally clean both inwardly and outwardly. A devotee is always expert because he fully knows the essence of all activities of life and is convinced of the authoritative scriptures. A devotee never takes the part of a particular party, therefore he is carefree. He is never pained because he is free from all designations. He knows that his body is a designation, so if there are some bodily pains, he is free. The pure devotee does not endeavor for anything which is against the principles of devotional service. For example, constructing a big building requires great energy. And the devotee does not take to such business if it does not benefit him by advancing his devotional service. He may construct a temple for the Lord, and for that he may take all kinds of anxiety, but he does not construct a big house for his personal relations. Ane paksha suchir daksha udasino gatavyata sarvaramba parityagi yo mat bhakta same priyaha. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. So Prabhupada starts the purport that the devotee should not struggle to acquire money. He even goes a step further. Not only should we not struggle for it, we should just wait for it automatically. If automatically, by the grace of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, money comes to him, he is not agitated. So that's basically, of course, you know, Prabhupada did go to, before he went to America, he went to Delhi and he preached to the higher class of Delhi, and sure he asked for donations. And that was a big struggle, but his, you know, he admitted his kind of, you know, he always kind of regretted. He said that, you know, I was trying to make money and become very rich, but Krishna had another plan, you know, and he made me fail at every step. And he said I could have been a millionaire, but Krishna didn't want it, and he failed my business somehow or other. And then he also said that he was forced to take sannyas by his Guru Maharaj indirectly, and by his godbrothers, or his one specific godbrother. And so he always regretted that. He said, I should not have wasted my time in trying to make this business, trying to make this money. Because that was his proposition, that I will make so much money and then I will preach. And then when everything failed, he just started to preach. And in the beginning it was a little bit of a struggle. That's of course struggle for preaching, not struggle for getting money. And then he came to America, and then so much money basically fell in his lap. And of course we know that Prabhupada was not agitated by that money. Naturally a devotee, that is the next point, so he's pure, Prabhupada explains. So that, I think that is that explained. Eh? My devotee is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. I don't know what is the Sanskrit exactly. Yeah, of course. You want to? Oh, well, I think this verse is for everybody. Yeah, even Grihastha. Like I know, for instance, Partha Sarthi. He told me, I never accept any donations if somebody doesn't chant 60 rounds. If they don't chant 16 rounds, he will not accept the donation. Partasarti. Not that he said it, that's just how he lives. Or it's the same in America, that's how he rolls. That's how he just, you know. Well, he's a new Grihastha, so let's see. But it seems that he fares pretty well. Of course, his wife, she has a very wonderful website with the translating business, and it goes very, very well. But he himself doesn't go out of his way to make money, and some other money comes automatically. So I think it's for everybody. If we just preach, then automatically money will come. Doesn't matter in which ashram we are. I mean, we can try and make money. That's what Prabhupada did. But he said, I don't recommend. He said, don't be like me. Don't be like me. Don't waste your time. You just surrender to Krishna.
Of Bhakti Sarathya, I mean, he's going on Sankirtan and he's getting donations for the books. I mean, it's not from people who are chanting 16 rounds, obviously.
No, you know what I mean?
They give a donation. They just give a donation.
Well,
we're not selling. No, it is a donation. This is what we are saying. No, it's okay. I mean, Prabhupada encouraged the grihasthas to work, to have businesses, to work. So it's not. We are depending on. I mean, the result is up to Krishna. It's not that we are not doing nothing and we're waiting for Krishna to, you know, bring some money. But I mean, we are not depending on the institution to give us money. Or we are working because we are working. We're getting money. I mean, the money is coming because Krishna is giving it. We are working. We are acting. But the result is actually coming from Krishna. But, I mean, the structure of working, I mean, for grihasthas was given by Prabhupada. I mean, and his intention also of working was that he wanted to make a lot of money for Krishna. It didn't work because Krishna didn't want it to work, but, you know, it was not that he was wasting time in the sense that he was doing something not Krishna conscious.
Somewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says also that he who does not work, he cannot even keep his body and soul together. So it seems like there are different instructions for different varnas. Krishna, he says in Bhagavad Gita, everyone has to work, because if you don't work, you can't keep body and soul together, something like that, I don't know. Do you remember Madhu Gopal, which verse it is? Contradictory, no. No, I also don't think so.
You know, it's true. I mean, what I said, it's in one sense. I mean, I like Partha. I think he's doing a very nice job because he's really preaching like anything. It's going all over the world. But at the same time, Prabhupada did say that, you know, grihasthas actually should not sell books. Yeah, he specifically forbade them. He said the books are for the temple. Grihasthas should do an outside job. They shouldn't take away money from the temple, which Prabhupada saw these books as. Yeah. Because it's a business of the temple. No, that's all right. If they bring it to the temple, then it's all right. But if they have an independent household and they're just collecting for their own house, he didn't like that. He said, no, they should have independent jobs. That's generally what he said. If they live in the temple or on temple property, you know, like in LA, they had these houses and they were from the temple. That's different. But generally, if they have an independent house, that he didn't want them to collect with books. He didn't want them to collect. Period. He wanted them to have, you know, regular jobs. But I think the point is that they should not struggle to acquire it. So Prabhupada says that you just take a small job, get a little money, and that's it. And don't waste your time in making a hole. Because that was what Prabhupada was trying to do. He was trying to become a millionaire. You see, that was his idea. I'm going to be super rich, and then with that money I will preach. And then he said, don't do like that, because, you know, it failed. And then when I started to preach, I got so much money. So that's the idea. And according to Griasas, yes, they should have regular jobs. They should work, like you say. But they should not go out of their way. Like, for instance, when Prabhupada explains about farming, he said, you just, you know, grow some grains, you have a cow, and finish. And the rest of your time, you chant Hare Krishna. So he didn't want his Griasas to make a whole career. He just wanted them to have simple jobs and just come to the temple. And of course, unfortunately, now we don't have a Gurukul system set up, but that was the idea. You just would put your children in Gurukul, and everything would be taken care of. There was no money needed for education. Everything was taken care of by the ISKCON. And now that you know, we made such a mess out of things, actually, there's basically no Gurukul, and yeah, it's not really, because as far as I understood, it was like free. You know, you just brought your kid to the Gurukul and was taken care of. So, you know, I think we have to a little bit reevaluate these things, but that was the idea, as far as I understand. Education should be free. That's what Prabhupada said, you know, our temples is free, everything is free. Prasadam is free, you know, the classes are free, everything is free. No charge. Still no one is coming, he said. 50-50? Well, maybe there's different quotes, but I know for a fact that at least in England, he specifically told Griasas not to do that, not to collect with books. You know, he wanted them to have regular jobs. Like I said, he felt that, I mean, maybe now things are different, but in those days he felt that it would take away money from the temple. Yeah. No, but the idea in those days, everything was sold by the BBT. So you would get the books basically for printing costs. And then you would sell it for a profit. You know, and then the idea was that 50% would go to the temple and 50% would go to the Mayapur Vrindavan Trust. You know, that's how it was set up. So, and that was done by the temples. And he didn't want Griasas, you know, putting that book money into their pockets. He wanted that money for the temple completely. So, but like I said, some Griasas, they would live actually in the temple and then would give all the money to the temple. So, and they were being maintained completely by the temple, like I was explaining with the Gurukul and stuff. You know, things were more set up, you know, on a, you know, sort of global scale. So, you know, then it was possible. And I think now people have lost a little bit faith, and also ISKCON has a little bit, you know, there's a reason also why people have lost their faith. It's not that it's just, you can just blame people, oh, you have lost your faith, many things went wrong. So, yeah, like I said, we need to reevaluate these things. But I think the system that was set up was a pretty good system. I don't think it should be changed. We should try and reintroduce these things slowly but surely. Anyway, it's interesting that Prabhupada, because that's the word anapekshaha, neutral. So basically he translates that who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. Well, that was my question to you, actually. Well, I mean, what I think it means, you like to enlighten us? Oh, it's in the translation. I was just looking at the word for word, because that word, anapeksha, means neutral. And the next word is suchi. So if you look at the translation, then obviously he translated that word anapeksha as neutral, as not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. And in the purport he says, money may be offered to a devotee, but he should not struggle to acquire it. If automatically by the grace of the Supreme money comes to him, he is not agitated. That's that point. Because then he goes on to the next point, which is purity. I think it's a little bit of a controversial point. to tell you the truth. I mean, money by itself is invested by Kali. You know, gold is invested by Kali. So, you know, already it's a very controversial topic just by itself. And then, you know, we have kind of a past with this, and yeah, it's just a bit of a controversial topic.
In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Prabhupada explains that money is, if you use it to, how do you say, support the principles of religion, then you will not be affected by the money. But if you use it to destroy the principles of religion, then you become corrupted. But money is needed. Money you must have. So, but the way you use it, that is, you have to be very conscious and careful about how you use it.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, it's not really being followed, because the idea is, like I said, the grihasthas, they either live in the temple and they give all, they collect with books, or, you know, generally books, and they give, or even if they have a job, they give all the money to the temple, and they're being fully maintained by the temple. And like I said, in those days they had full faith. Prabhupada was still there and they had full faith in the temple. As soon as Prabhupada left, things became a little bit shaky. And then the other model is that the grihastha lives outside, he has a regular job, and he gives 50% to the temple. That's the system that Prabhupada introduced. And now I hear so many, I've also worked a regular job, and I know it's very tough. But, you know, that's the order of the spiritual master. Hanumat Prasak Swami, he said that sometimes we feel, or at least I feel that, oh, I shouldn't offend any devotees. But he mentioned, if you don't follow Prabhupada's instruction, that's an offense right there. If you don't follow his instructions, that's an offense. That's an offense to the pure devotee. You know, I mean, that's actually, in one sense, more serious. Yeah, that's, you get all these things, you see, before taxes, after. I have even one devotee saying, no, it's just the profit. You just have to give the profit. That's the 50% of the profit. Yeah, it's very clear. It's off the income. And before, after taxes? I would say before taxes. Well, no, but that's the thing. Yeah. No, but that's what I was saying. You know, in those days, you had a gurukul, and all the kids would go to the gurukul. It was free of charge. That was the idea. And people had faith. They had faith that my kids will become preachers. I mean, that was the idea, at least. And they will become preachers, and then they will be maintained by the temples, like I'm being maintained. That was the idea. And I don't want to get into the whole history of ISKCON, but we just got a little bit messed up. And now things are very individualistic, and you know, and all the grihasthas, or most of the grihasthas, they put their children, you know, through schools. And also you have to pay for the gurukul, you know. You have to pay a lot of money. I'm not sure what the price is, but you have to pay for it to put your kid through the gurukul even. You know. So that wasn't like that. That's what I'm saying, it's a controversial topic.
If you consider the Varna of Kshatriyas, they should never take any donations from anybody, Kshatriya. So, and also, I don't know, but it's not good for them, seems like. I don't know.
No, it's a sign of submission.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
It's a Brahmana, it's a professional beggar.
Yeah, but I also wonder if it is healthy for a grihastha to be maintained by a temple. I don't know. If it is healthy for grihasthas to be maintained by a temple community. Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean, yeah. Yeah, because in ISKCON for a while it was like this, that brahmacharis and brahmacharinis were maintaining the grihasthas. Which, well, in Sweden it was. And it was a little strange.
They were having jobs, or they were collecting with books, the grihasthas. And that's how it was in Prabhupada's time, if you read the letters. You know, some of them were living in the temples, and those were, you know, distributing books, or they were having jobs, and they were just giving the money to the temple. In that sense, they were being maintained, like I said, that their children were going through Gurukul, and their house was from the temple, and you know, they would just take prasadam in the temple, like that they were being maintained. But they were working hard, you know, either a regular job outside or distributing with books. So that was. I mean, I don't know exactly because I wasn't there. So we should ask some people, especially in LA, because that was actually the capital of ISKCON, was the head center of ISKCON. Prabhupada said all the temples should take example of what is it called, Dwarkadish. Rukmini, yeah, but the temple that was also called Dwarkadish, no? Or Dwarka, or New Dwarka, was it not called New Dwarka? Anyway, the LA temple, but, you know, so he wanted everybody to copy that example. Anyway, so not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. So anybody care to comment on that? And you know, specifically in the light of the purport, eh?
Somebody was mentioning something that he's not conditioned. You know, if something is going in a certain way, you know, he's not stopping his determination because it is going in a certain way, which is like you do something and you expect a certain result because of acting a certain way. But a devotee is depending on Krishna completely, not on the way that things are working externally. So that's. Like you see Prabhupada, I mean, he was doing things which are totally beyond what people will do because he was depending on Krishna, he was not depending on so-called material logic.
Yeah, so that's the point, I think, and that's what we've been discussing, that specifically, because we're now on this topic of grihasthas, that they would just have a, you know, simple job. They wouldn't, because ordinary course in one sense also means like karma, you know, and here Krishna says anapeksha, he is just neutral, so he doesn't, like I said, a devotee is not recommended that he goes for a career, you know, and goes into this whole kind of rat race. That's kind of the ordinary course of activities at the moment, so devotee is not expected to be dependent on that, like Prabhu is saying, the devotee should be dependent on Krishna. He should not struggle to acquire it, Prabhupada says in the purport. Okay, shall we move on to the next point? Purity. A devotee takes a bath at least twice a day and rises early in the morning. That's in the purport. Who is pure, Krishna says, Suchihi. Suchi and Muchi. Muchi means dirty, Suchi means clean. So at least twice a day, actually Prabhupada many times recommends that, you know, at least the twice initiated devotees, they should take three times a day. And here in one sense it's confirmed. He says at least twice a day. So that means, like, you know, better to have three times a day. And Prabhupada says, thus, if you bathe three times a day or at least twice, thus he is naturally clean both inwardly and outwardly. So, but outwardly is the taking bath 3 times a day, and the inwardly is the rising early for devotional service. Yeah, you said the sannyasi is supposed to take 3 times a day. There is one quote where it says that the brahmachari 1 time, and grihastha 2 times, and or varnaprastha 2 times. Grihastha 2 times and sannyasi 3 times. Oh, okay.
Somebody said that it's. I mean, I think I read it somewhere that because they're supposed to keep awake. So they don't sleep. So then, in order not to maintain, the being awake, so they take baths. So that's why they continue the day without sleeping. They don't sleep. When you take a bath, you wake up, you know. So then you don't sleep. You sleep little. You just sleep your quarter in the night, but you don't sleep throughout the day. So that's why somebody was saying that actually they take a bath when they're, when they're tired, so they don't fall asleep. I read it. It's not my speculation.
Yeah, it makes sense. There's one story with Srutakirti where Prabhupada takes a bath in the airport and he says, "Oh, I was very tired." So taking bath definitely, like I sometimes say that, taking extra rest is overrated and taking bath is underrated. Because like they also say in the Israeli army, that there is a saying that if you take a bath before you sleep, it cuts off 1 or 2 hours of your sleep. So you take a bath before you take rest, you need less sleep. So it's kind of a science. And personally, I can also attest that if you take a bath, it's sort of like you reset the body. And it's the same what you do when you sleep. Like, we have computers, you have like a reset button. So it's the same when you sleep. You sort of reset the brain, but similar kind of thing happens when you take a shower. Huh? Yes, it affects the subtle body, especially when you take a cold shower, which I have not been so much able to do. Rather, yeah. But actually, Prabhupada wants us also to take cold showers. Not the women's? I never heard that. Okay. Well, I never heard Prabhupada said that. Never women. Huh? Right. Well, no, it's not necessary, but it's not, it's recommended. In one sense, that it's... Well, I don't know. Brahmachari, definitely. But I don't know. I mean, it's good for spiritual life, let me put it like that, taking cold shower. They say just by taking cold showers, you can go to the heavenly planets. Just by taking cold showers. Yeah. Yeah. No, but I'm just saying it's very powerful. It's very powerful.
About the cold shower... The hot water is to cleanse away the dirt, to clean the physical body. But then you can end with cold, because then you take a shower of the subtle body. And it's actually very good, especially if it's very cold outside, to end with cold water, because then the circulation starts and you don't feel freezy all day. Actually, you feel warm. So in that way, it's good. But I also read somewhere that like rain, it has an effect of these positive molecules, I think. Positive molecules or something. Actually, the shower has the same effect, that because we take so much kind of negative energy all day. And then with the water, it becomes like neutralized and positive again. So even the non-devotees are accepting this, that it's important to take shower.
No, but I'll be honest with you, I don't take a cold shower, but I'm just saying Prabhupada always took cold shower. Before he came to America, he always took cold shower, never hot. And then even when he was there in America, he would take these bucket showers. So it wasn't even hot. It was like lukewarm. It was basically cold. Yeah, but as far as I know, when Prabhupada was there, everybody took cold shower. Women, children, men. And for children it might not be so recommended. But like you said, if you want to do it, then it should be encouraged, I think, you know, because I think it's very healthy also.
I'd like to ask you, are there exceptions from this rule? For example, for people who suffer from a kind of hypersensitivity of the skin, for example, they feel something like an enormous pain when the cold water is running on his or her skin. Exceptions from the rule are possible?
It's not that there is a rule that you have to take a cold shower. The rule is that you have to take a shower. That's the rule. And I'm just giving a sort of a note that it's recommended that you should take cold. And like my own realization also is that, you know, for me it's very tough taking cold shower. And it's almost like dying. And that's exactly the point. Because when you die, you also get very cold and then very hot. So you sort of prepare yourself for that feeling, for dying. You know, you get totally shocked when you take a cold shower. So you get sort of used to that feeling, you know. I was just telling that Prabhupada, he tells one story that he would break the ice off the bucket and he would still take the shower. Brahmutra. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, Brahma Muhurta. Right. Yeah, so Brahma Muhurta is taking ice baths in Sweden. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not doing it myself, but I'm recommending it. It's very healthy if you can do it. And if you can't do it, then at least, like Prabhu was saying, take a cold shower after the hot shower, which I also don't do, by the way. But I'm just, you know, I'm preaching to myself, you know. I was also sick, so then the doctor said I shouldn't take cold shower. So then I was very happy. I thought, doctor says it. But no, I can recommend it. It's very, very important. But the point is, we should take shower. Huh? No, it's good for me. You know, it's good for me. But, you know, we have to take shower. That's the main point. Okay. So we go on to the next, which is Daksha. A devotee is always expert because he fully knows the essence of all activities of life and he is convinced of the authoritative scriptures. Yeah, so here I think this refers to, I mean not really refers to, but this brings to mind when Prabhupada says you have to know something of everything and you have to know everything of something. So in other words, we should be expert in the authoritative scriptures. And we should know the essence of all activities of life. We should know at least the essence. Not that we have to know all the details, but we should know the essence of... Well, I don't know, like the essence of a soldier is that he's, you know, very, you know, courageous. Yeah. 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 Well, I think, like I said, that you have to know something of everything. So you know the essence of all activities of life. Not that you know all the details, but you know the essence. So Prabhupada, he knew, you know, about medicine, he knew the essence. He said, It's also actually from Shastra. You have Vata, Kapha, Pitta. That's the essence of health. He didn't know all the details. He wasn't a doctor, but he knew the essence. So we should know the essence of all activities of life.
It's more philosophical thing of knowing the essence of all activities. You know, like essence of all activities can be like chewing the chewed, you know? This is the essence of all activities. You know, material activities, you know, they have some kind of philosophical subject, a topic for that. That's the essence. I mean, like, you mean really knowing how to do everything? That's the idea? The essence is the connection to Krishna. That's the essence of the activities. That's the.
Well, you could say it like that, but you know, I mean, expert is expert. The devotee is always expert because he fully knows the essence of all activities of life. I mean, in one sense, you're right. Like, for instance, he could preach to the scientists because he knew the essence of life. But at the same time, he knew some scientific things also. He knew sort of. So I think yeah.
He was expert in the science of Krishna consciousness, and because of this, he could preach to everybody. He could connect every activity actually to Krishna consciousness, and because of this, he could come to the essence of it, and he could speak with everybody because it is connected. I mean, he was expert in you know, actually making people even understand what they're doing. So it's all connected.
Yeah, I think you're right. I kind of misread it. But at the same time, it does bring to mind that thing that Prabhupada says you should know something of everything and everything of something. So what about that then? Because I think it's a good explanation what you gave, but what about that point then?
It made me think about that everything is actually connected. Oh, sorry, I didn't hear. Yeah, no, it is that everything is connected. I mean, all the activities are ultimately connected with Krishna, and the essence of all rules is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So everything we do is actually to follow that rule. All the rules are, isn't all the rules are servants of that one rule, or divided into.
What about this? You have to know something of everything.
It just came to mind. This is, you know, how Prabhupada was connecting actually every type of person, you know, and his activities was connecting to Krishna consciousness because he knew the essence of it, you know. So he was speaking once with somebody who was, his profession was to make glass, and then he was asking, where do you get the glass from, you know? I mean, of course he knows something about, you know, how glass is made of, but they were saying, you know, this is from the sand. And then he was saying, you know, where the sand is coming from. And he said, you know, where it comes from. They said, you take it. So to whom it belongs? To Krishna. So he said, you are a thief. You take it, you know. So then he connects it, actually. You know, he knows something about how to make glass, but at the same time goes to the essence of it. You know, actually, you are a thief. You know, you take it without acknowledging, you know. So it comes to the same thing, you know, where it comes from. You know, what is the essence of your activity?
Okay, I think that's clear. Then the next point, a devotee never takes the part of a particular party, therefore he is carefree. This is called Uddashinaha, free from care. Without cares, Prabhupada translates. So he's saying a devotee never takes the part of a particular party, therefore he is carefree. Carefree means without care, means I don't care. Well, not indifferent, it just means no worries. Like in Australia they say, no worries, mate. It means you don't get too much, you know, I mean, particular party, the first thing that comes to mind is of course political parties. which is also what, you know, how Prabhupada started. You know, he was into Gandhi, Gandhi's movement of independence. And then his Guru Maharaj said, no, 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 we're not into all these parties. You just surrender to Krishna. This is the real problem. This is what the world needs. India needs Krishna consciousness. If India takes the Krishna consciousness, all the problems will be solved. So I think, you know, that's the main thing, of course, when we think of parties. But any party. That, I mean, more and more I'm understanding that, not only from this chapter but also from the other points, that Krishna, he sometimes describes himself, but the devotee is like Krishna, just minutely. We have to get these same, and Krishna describes it also in the talks between Krishna and Rukmini. He says, I'm very detached, and he says, my devotees are just like me, they're also very detached, they don't care about marriage life and stuff like that. You know, not so much, you know, they're a little bit, you know, neglectful with these things, they just care about chanting, and so, yeah.
It's like automatically a bodily concept of life, you know. Party, to take aside, you know. If it's based on bodily concept, if somebody is on the spiritual platform, it actually sees, you know, the unity between everybody. But if somebody is on the bodily platform, we have parties, you know, we have, you know, divisions, this one is this one is that, you know, so then it's automatically not transcendental. So then, because the body is spiritual, so he sees things on the spiritual platform, and he doesn't have this kind of division.
Yeah, because that was the point I wanted to make, is that Krishna says that, what is that verse? I think, yayatamam prapachyante tangsate vam jamyam mama vartmanu vartante, that everybody's following my path, and you know, I reward them accordingly. So, and I think Prabhupada explains in the purport that, or at least in on other occasions, that, you know, that anybody can become a devotee, and Krishna reciprocates according to the surrender of the devotee. So similarly, we do have a party, we have Krishna's party, but we don't make it like exclusive, in the sense that anybody who chanting Hare Krishna, anybody who is helping the mission, he's accepted. So, yeah, in one sense, one party, yeah. And but also, like you said, it's not based on material designation, it's not based on bodily designation, just anybody who chants Hare Krishna, he can become part of the party. It's not that we say, no, you're black, or you're white, or you're, you know, whatever, and therefore you cannot come to our temple. No, if you chant Hare Krishna, then you can come.
Even if somebody doesn't chant Hare Krishna, he's a spirit soul. So this is the devotee can see. Even if somebody is not chanting, he knows it. I mean, devotee knows that actually everybody is part and parcel of Krishna. Everybody is a devotee ultimately. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is not. It doesn't see any party. It sees only one party. You know, one book, one party.
Well, you know. What we can designate as a material party. It's a material party. Because at some stage, if people don't want to chant Hare Krishna, they become a disturbance. You know, they should be asked to leave. If somebody just comes here and he's just not easy, you know, I don't know, he's just preaching atheism all the time. At some stage, it's like, you know, I mean, why you're here? You know, so in that sense, we do also have kind of a party. But it's not based on material designations. It's based on person surrender to Krishna, and it doesn't matter who he is. So in that sense, it's not really a party. Party is usually based on material designations. So we're German, you're Jewish, like that. You know? Okay. Move on to the next point. He's never pained because he's free from all designations. But this is a kind of a point. It says here, gata vyata. Free from all distress. He's never pained because he's free from all designations. He knows that his body is a designation. So if there are some bodily pains, he is free. That's a high level, huh? I know Prabhupada once he had like a toothache, and he had like a, you know, infection like this big, and he said something like, you know, yeah, I'm a little inconvenienced or something like that. He just completely ignored it. He was just chewing these spices, what do you call them, cloves. That was it. So, yeah, it's a high level. But, you know, if you really realize that you're not the body, that the body is a designation, then you don't identify with it, and therefore you're free from pains. But it's kind of a high level. Okay, go to the next point. A pure devotee does not endeavor for anything which is against the principles of devotional service. This is called... I think it's called parityagi, no? He is renounced. So it's the same point as anapeksha, but it's a little bit more deep, it seems. Parityagi, the pure devotee does not endeavor for anything which is against the principles of devotional service. For example, constructing a big building requires great energy, and the devotee does not take to such business if it does not benefit him by advancing his devotional service. He may construct a temple for the Lord, and for that he may take all kinds of anxiety, but he does not construct a big house for his personal relations. So that is called parityagi, renouncer. So that is called, what is that called by Rupa Goswami? Falko Varagya, Yukta Varagya, Uchate. What's that verse? Yeah? You know the verse? Oh. Anyway, it's called Yukta Varagya by Rupa Goswami. It was exemplified by Bhaktisiddhanta Goswami Maharaj, Prabhupada's guru, by, you know, introducing cars in devotional service, and I think he even sometimes wore leather shoes and, you know, nice suits and like that. So that's anything that, you know, Prabhu was also saying that the main thing is to remember Krishna. So anything that helps us in serving Krishna should be accepted. This is Rupa Goswami's explanation. And anything that is not helping our Krishna consciousness, that should be renounced. Chak. Yeah, so that Prabhupada is saying that exactly. Connecting a big building requires great energy, and the devotee does not take to such business if it does not benefit him by advancing his devotional service. Of course, there are some exemptions, like for instance, the Bombay Temple. I mean, Prabhupada, he really dug in there because he felt, I invited Lord Krishna, or what was his name? You remember the deity of Juhu? Anybody knows? Radha Rasa Bihari. Yeah, so he felt he already invited him on the land, and then he felt it would be an insult to ask him to vacate the land. So it became such a big fight, and I won't mention any names, but his disciples, they said, no, Prabhupada, this is too much. And they actually signed the contracts, and Prabhupada again unsigned the contracts, kind of, and...
This is what he was doing, you know. He was making a contract with somebody. Yeah, once upon a time he was there, but he was making a contract with somebody, and then they were paying. He was asking for down payment, and then he was was saying that something is wrong with the contract, and they cannot get the money back. And like this, he was just going on from one person to the other, you know, getting money and not giving anything to the person. Then he died.
Yeah.
And then Papa said, I was praying for that.
Yeah. So, but that is, of course, again, it is different because it's transcendental.
And for Krishna, we can take so many hardships. And in that sense, it doesn't not benefit us in advancing our devotional service, because it's related to Krishna. It's an act of pure devotion, actually. No, but the point is, it should not be over-endeavor. Prabhupada says, we're not interested in big buildings. We're interested in printing books. You know? Yeah, yeah, but it came generally, it came out of his own accord. The money would come and he would build them. But he wouldn't go out of his way to, you know, collect money to make temples. And that is the point, because, you know, we can get entangled by making so much money to construct a temple. And then it's an obstruction in our advancement of devotional service. But, you know, the thing with Bombay was kind of an act of pure devotion. So it's on another kind of level, in one sense. Well, in one sense, it was became such a battle, you know, and it took so much. I mean, Prabhupada really it took so much out of him. It gave him so much stress, but he just felt that it is an insult to Krishna. I cannot forsake it. I cannot do it.
The way that Prabhupada dealt with the whole thing of Bombay was really, you know, something from this verse. That it's not depending on the ordinary course of activities. I mean, he was just determined, you know, to have Krishna stay there, and he didn't. Not dependent, you know, just completely going through everything, just. You know, make sure that his Lord is going to be, you know, victorious. Prabhupada was taking any action, you know, just to make sure that Krishna will stay there. So this is really the example of a devotee who is not, I mean, it's like totally transcendental. He's doing things which are totally not ordinary, just to defend his Lord. Yes.
Yeah. So again, I mean, it sounds to me that in one sense we shouldn't make a huge big house if we're like a grihastha. You know, we shouldn't make super big house. You know, for his personal relations. But if it's for Krishna, then it's different. Of course, now many devotees have all deities and stuff, so you could. you could make an argument, but anyway, the rule is like we quoted Rupa Goswami, that it should benefit us by it should benefit our advancement in devotional service. Okay, I guess that's it. No more questions. I have a question. Who's going to sing the bhajan? Yeah. Okay. So but who's gonna sing then? Yes, for Radha Gopinath. You like to sing? Or you maybe you like to sing? Or Anasuya? Okay. Doesn't matter. Doesn't have to be harmony. Huh? Yeah, I know a little bit. Okay. So, any more questions? Oh, that's nice. Yeah, why don't we do that? So that's it? We'll close the class? Finished? Yes? Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna.